I'm Keith Law. Welcome to episode 74 of The Keith Law Show. My guest today is going to be Craig Calcaterra. You can find his subscription newsletter at cupofcoffee.substack.com. Craig also has a book coming out in the spring, Rethinking Fandom. We'll talk about all of that. English Premier League soccer, Welsh rugby, local Columbus politics, just for a moment, obviously, how Craig and I consume baseball games, and a whole lot more. For subscribers to The Athletic, my most recent piece is last week's column on the transformation of Austin Riley from replacement-level hitter to all-star and, I would say, down-ballot MVP candidate. All the credit in the world goes to Austin for the work that he did on that. I tried to detail that and back it up with data as much as possible. I will be heading out to a few more minor league games this month. The nice thing is, with this horrible pandemic influence season, is at least we have a few more weeks of minor league baseball going up to the end of the year. It was up in Somerset on Saturday. Maybe going down to Aberdeen one more time, hopefully getting up to a couple more games before the season runs out. Also, for those of you who share my interest in tabletop gaming, board gaming, I will be at Gen Con this weekend. Feel free to drop me a line on any social media site, Twitter at Keith Law, Facebook Keith Law Writer, Instagram MR Mr. Keith Law. And let me know if you're going to be at Gen Con. Be happy to meet up, sign any books, maybe get a game in before the convention is done. I know it's a smaller show this year, but I am still very much looking forward to it. Now it is my pleasure to be joined by my longtime friend, Craig Calcaterra. Craig writes a wonderful subscription newsletter, which I strongly suggest you subscribe to. I subscribe to it. You can go there to subscribe at cupofcoffee.substack.com. As we are talking now, I have a cup of coffee. I do not have an actual cup of coffee mug. I have to get on that. But I do actually have coffee to talk to you today, Craig.
I have a cup of coffee mug. I sell them through like one of those like red bubble things or whatever. And I went 6 months without having one of myself. And my wife, Allison, said, you need to get one. So she got one for me. And I think I've only used it twice. So I'm a really bad person when it comes to like selling merch.
Put up this shirt that says, you know, I'm just here for the UMP show to raise some money for a local group that's helping Afghan refugees settle in my area here in Delaware. And my wife asked me over the weekend, she said, where's yours? I'm like, oh, I forgot to buy one. Yeah, I guess they don't send you one, right?
No, they don't. Yeah. I really love those companies, you know, I guess Redbubble, what's the other one? There's a Cafe Press, things like that, where they'll make merch for you. They're really cool, except they take 90% of the money and don't give you anything free. So other than that, it's fantastic.
Yes. I used Bonfire for this. I don't know how much else they do, but I shopped around. I was like, well, what'll actually raise the most money per shirt? And that's how I settled on them. Also, they were very easy to use. And even like, I mean, I just did the design did it freehand and took a photograph, and they like touched it up for me, which is very good because I am many things. I am not an artist.
It's, you know, when people have actual skills, unlike me or you in the art kind of department, it's kind of nice to use them no matter what they charge.
Yes, absolutely. So we're going to talk about Columbus politics today.
Fun.
Right? I figured that'll be, maybe we can do one baseball question at the end. But, so when are you running for city council there?
They will not let me. It's funny. I write this political column every 2 weeks for Columbus Alive, which is an alternative paper here, kind of an alternative paper, I guess. That's a long story. But I don't live in Columbus, actually. I live in a suburb of New Albany, and I have become a giant pain in the butt for New Albany people. I've only lived here for, 16 years now, and I'm finally getting involved in the place that I'm about ready to move out of in 2 years. So yeah, it's going great. No, I'm not awesome. Running for anything. They won't have me.
So we'll talk a little baseball. I also want to talk, you've got a book coming out in April that is called Rethinking Fandom. We'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. But your main thing in your newsletter starts every day with recaps of the previous day's activities. We don't have to go through every game yesterday. However, what exactly is going on in Baltimore right now? I'm not sure. And I mean, I know those guys. I don't want to pick on them too much. But that's kind of tankish when you're giving up. Joe Sheehan pointed this out. They gave up 10-plus runs twice in the span of 4 innings.
Yeah, it's just an absolute tire fire. And it gets really old really fast describing a bad team. If you had to cover a bad team every single day, I mean, God love you. You're looking for stories. You're looking for angles. You're trying.
There would
not
be
to
more
be...
than coffee in this cup.
Oh yeah, exactly. Exactly. With the recaps, it's great because I don't have to do anything in depth. I mean, I'm a dilettante at heart, so I don't have to like sit and talk about what the problem with the Baltimore Orioles is very often, you know, once in the off season, or if they make a move or something like that. They're not going to make a move, but you know, if something comes up, but once in a while when they have a weekend as bad as they just had against the Blue Jays, you're left searching for a way to compare it. And the closest thing I can think of was when Brandon Hyde, their manager, after losing a 22-4 game after just blowing a doubleheader where they gave up 22 runs, says, "We swung the bat pretty well. We're just not pitching very well." That is the classic understatement. I had to search. I Googled the greatest understatements of all time. The number one on the list, they're all British, by the way, of course, because you have to be British for that kind of understatement.
Yes.
Number one on the list was when someone lost their leg at the Battle of Waterloo and someone said, "Well, my gosh, you have lost your leg, haven't you?" And so this one, though, this was a true story. In 1982, a 747 from British Airways flew through volcano ash over the Indian Ocean, lost all four engines. The pilot came on and said, "Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. We have a small problem. All four engines have stopped. We are doing our damnedest to get them going again. I trust you're not in too much distress." That is Brandon Hyde level of understatement. And you know, what else can you do? What does Brandon Hyde do? There's no school for how to talk about this.
No, and I, you know, it's Orioles fans, I had an Orioles writer contact me a couple of weeks ago to sort of ask, you know, how do you think the rebuild's going? And I actually kind of came down more on the side of the Orioles. This was a pretty bad situation that Mike Elias and company mm-hmm. inherited. This was going to take a long time. But also, they have to build a pitching staff.
Yeah.
I mean, Brandon Hyde's kind of alluding to that. And you sort of look in the major league club and you look down the system. Yes, Grayson Rodriguez is coming. Hopefully DL Hall does not, you know, hopefully he'll stay healthy enough, because actually there were points where I thought he was the better pitching prospect of the two. But you need five big league starters, more or less. Obviously some teams get by with fewer than that. And really you need more than that to build a major league rotation. This isn't specific to the Orioles. A lot of these rebuilding teams, you look 2-3 years into the rebuild, you think, wait, where's the pitching going to come from? A lot of these teams can draft hitters. And I feel like if you're very model centric as a drafting team, you can probably find enough hitters. But, you know, I feel like Brandon Hyde's going to be making comments about the pitching staff for a long time, unless they spend money, which obviously doesn't seem like ownership is about ready to do in Baltimore.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the weather. You could only describe it in so many ways and you can't do anything about it. Certainly he can't in his position. And I look at this team. I mean, I slag on them all the time because there's great humor in slagging on bad teams. But there are some offensive pieces there. It's mm-hmm. not completely barren. It's actually interesting.
No.
And I would love to imagine a situation where Cedric Mullins, for example, is sort of the veteran, the Carlos Baerga on the mid-90s Indians. That's the kind of thing that I would like to think of him as. He's not going to be there for the entire run when they're good again, but like he gets some glory towards the end. He's like 26, 27 something right now.
Right. Ancient.
Yeah, but at least he's interesting. I mean, there have been cratering terrible teams that don't have anybody worth watching. And, you know, watching him is fun. And, you know, the Trey Mancini story obviously is a great story. But yeah, you can't invent pitching, and it's just going to take forever.
So would you rather, when you have to do this point in the year, right? So we're in mid-September and most teams are out of it. Would you rather write a recap of a game between two teams that are just totally out of it and they're just playing out the string, or competitive a game that at least involves one team that's heading for the playoffs, or does it just depend on what happened in the game?
Meaningless baseball is way more interesting to me. I mean, as a writer, as a very self-indulgent navel-gazing writer, meaningless baseball is more interesting to me. If you're a good writer, you know, then you can make a lot of good stuff. Like, this is what real writers do, is they make World Series games seem interesting. I can't do that, but I can definitely find the existential ennui in a, you know, an Orioles-Royals game in, you know, late September or something like that. That's where the fun stuff is for me, because I just like to think of all the my whole thing is where real life intersects baseball. I don't even consider myself a baseball writer sometimes, because I'm just sort of watching like everybody else and just coming up with whatever. And it's way more fun to find real life stuff that helps put baseball misery in perspective, because baseball misery isn't real misery.
No.
On-field baseball misery is, and it's still a ball game, and that's great, and it's fun. And I know these guys do this for a living, and they take it very seriously, and I don't mean to belittle that, but when you could, you know, look at a game like that, and then just start thinking about, you know, the Battle of Hastings, you know, that's where the good stuff is for me. I love meaningless baseball.
Meaningless baseball might be the name of my Substack. I actually really like that. I'm going to steal that.
I've said this like a million times. I've written it 100 different ways, and I recycle myself all the time. But on this point specifically, you know, for me, baseball is, to use the cliche, it's the soundtrack of a summer. It's the background. Mm-hmm. I just like baseball as a place to sort of live in, as opposed to following it breathlessly or analyzing it granularly. It's just not what I do. And my love of baseball ever since I was a little kid is that thing that's always on. And the stakes are, in any given game, not counting October, the stakes are very, very low. And there's something comforting in that. We live in a society that is, stakes are extraordinarily high staked, and it's getting worse as we get older. At least it seems that way. Maybe that's just an old man thing to say, but a meaningless game in August or September or something like that just reminds me of something normal, something easy, something relaxing, and I have fun with it.
I absolutely associate, particularly baseball on the radio, which is a shame, mm-hmm. because of course, you know, a lot of people don't use the radio. Like, I can't think of the last time I actually had the radio on. My wife listens to the local public radio music station, listener-supported music station, WXPN, way more than I do. If I'm in the car, it's a podcast or it's Spotify. Mm-hmm. But I have so many memories of sitting outside as a kid with a baseball game on the radio. Usually the Yankees, but if the Yankees weren't on, we would put the Mets on. We were like pretty equal opportunity as a household. It was not like Yankees rule, Mets suck. We were not those people. My parents
are Long Island, right?
Yes.
Okay, I thought that was like all Mets territory.
My parents are from the Bronx.
Ah,
okay. They were Bronx born and raised. My grandmother, my grandpa, like my entire family came out of the Bronx. And between that and being Italian, my mother's completely Italian, my dad's half Italian, the Yankees were very much the Italian team. So we were a Yankee household first. If there had been interleague play, we would have been all Yankees when they were playing the Mets. But my parents just did not raise us. Like, the idea of like, well, you're supposed to hate this other team, I didn't get that at home. I would get that at school, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I hate the Cowboys because I'm a good American. But like, I didn't hate the Red Sox. In the 86 World Series, I was rooting for the Mets because they were the local team. And so, not because I hated the Red Sox specifically. And so, I just have lots of memories of, particularly the Yankees broadcast. It was Messer, White, and Rizzuto. And I still have such a clear memory of Mel Allen coming back to do a couple of innings, some point probably in the mid-80s, was just hanging out outside. And like, I knew him as the voice of This Week in Baseball. You're old enough, right?
Here.
We're about the same age. Like, mm-hmm. that's who he was. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, I knew Mel Allen was a former Yankees broadcaster, but I'd never actually heard him do a game. And even as a kid, I was like, okay, this seems pretty cool. And that's very much like a soundtrack of summer thing to me.
I was introduced to baseball on the radio. My family were not sports fans. My parents aren't sports fans. I didn't have uncles that were sports fans. I had a great uncle that introduced me to baseball, but not anything like most kids have. Mm-hmm. I was introduced to baseball because I didn't like going to sleep in a quiet room, and mm-hmm. I could get WJR. And I was flipping when I was like 5 years old. I was flipping the radio and I got WJR from Detroit. I was in Flint, Michigan as a kid.
Okay.
And I got Ernie Harwell doing Tigers games.
Oh.
And that, to me, that's the first I heard. I just assumed Ernie Harwell was sort of the standard for baseball, which of course he was not. He was, inner circle, whatever.
Gold standard.
Exactly. Yeah. Ernie Harwell and Paul Carey, he didn't have a solo booth. And Paul Carey, they would, he'd take middle innings. And color commentary then was every three innings, the guy would say, yeah, he really hit that one. I mean, like crazy. So it was just Ernie Harwell. And that was it. And, I later would get on TV and I would watch TBS when I moved away from Detroit and watch the Braves games and everything. But now, I have MLB TV. I could watch basically any game. We're only blacked out here in Ohio from a couple of teams. And I, of course, watch the postseason all the time and everything on TV. Yeah. But during the season, and this season is probably the most extreme that I've had since I was a kid, I think 90% of the baseball I've consumed this season has been on the radio, via the MLB app of the radio feeds.
Yeah, yeah.
I can do things with the baseball on the radio that I can't while it's on TV. I could write while baseball on the radio is going on. I could read a little bit if it's not too intense while baseball is on the radio. I could do work around the house because I can carry my phone with me and listen to it. So I have rediscovered over the past 3 or 4 years, I'd say, but this year was definitely the year where it is a radio pursuit for me now. And I love it. I absolutely love it. I get more out of it. I've seen enough baseball in my life where I can imagine what's happening in any given situation. If it's described to me, you know, if a crazy play happens, it bounces off three guys' heads and then falls, you know, for a hit or something,
I'll go find it.
Yeah, it's there. It's not going anywhere. And I can go watch the replay or something. And my recaps is a great example. Like in the evening, especially during the week, we were talking before we started recording how early I wake up. Well, I go to sleep pretty early too. And sometimes I'm even asleep before the East Coast games are done. I'll listen on the radio for a little while. In the morning, when I wake up to do my recaps, I'll just go back to MLB TV. And if there are 4 or 5 interesting plays in the game, I'll just watch them. Yep. And I don't know if that makes me not a real fan or what, but it is a URL sort of medium for me now.
That's interesting that you say. I have so many, honestly, we could just talk about how we consume baseball for an hour easily. I mean, we'll continue talking about that for a moment. One thing that's interesting is I can sit there. You say you can't write if you're watching, but you can write if you're listening.
Yeah. I mean, I can if I'm watching, but I just find myself looking up too much. Yeah.
It's funny because I'm the opposite. If it's on, and I do this constantly now, I love to have, especially if it's just me, if everyone else in the house is doing other stuff, I can have the game on the screen. I'll turn the sound way down, mostly because I don't want to hear the announcers.
Yeah.
And then I can write. Whereas if all I have is the audio, I have to listen. I can't listen and write. Like, I've learned that from, like, family members also. Like, did you hear what I just said? And I'm like, no.
Well, see, I'm the same way with people talking to me. It's like I'm far more likely to listen to, you know, Tom Hamilton or somebody than I am to listen to my my kids. So.
Now, do you find you listen to a lot of games because of the recap specifically? Mm-hmm. Do you bounce around? Do you try to listen to whole games or close to whole games? You know, a whole game is a large commitment when you're trying to cover everything, but like. How do you typically consume then? Do you try to bounce from game to game and look for something interesting, or do you stick with one game for a while?
If there are day games during the week, I'll just listen to one whole game. I'll always listen to like one whole game. I don't like switch. Okay, now I'm going to go to this game. Now I'm going to go to that game. And I'm not even really doing it for purposes of, I got to write this recap tomorrow, because my recaps are almost totally a function of box stores and game stories and highlights. But when I'm listening during the week, when no one's here, when Allison's at work and the kids are at school, if there's a day game, I'll just listen to the whole thing. And I'll just pick, you know, during the week, you only have a choice of a couple of day games. So that's not a big deal. On the weekend, if I'm working in the garage or doing something like that, I'll just pick whatever sounds like the best pitching matchup usually. Mm-hmm. Late in the season, starting now, certainly the last couple of weeks of the season, if there are games that are important for postseason position, I'll probably go to those. But I'm not following any given team. I tend to gravitate towards better broadcasters if all things are equal. But it's almost completely random. It's just whatever sounds fun at the time.
Yeah, that's I'm with you on the better broadcasters, and I will say there are not many, but there are some very good ones, and there are some teams. I mean, God, when Hawk Harrelson was doing the White Sox games.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that I wouldn't watch the White Sox, but I'd watch the other team's feed or just have the sound off.
Yeah.
And you just... Ugh.
It could just be assaulting, especially TV can be... The variance in TV is way bigger.
Yeah, I agree.
But, I mean, if Bob Uecker's doing a Brewers game, even if I don't want to listen to the Brewers game, I'm going to turn it on.
Yeah. I find that I bounce now, especially, where it's like, is so-and-so, who's pitching? Is it a particular prospect or a player I haven't seen or somebody who's having an unexpected year, you know, where I can jump in and, you know, watch a couple innings, watch specific at-bats. Kiebert Ruiz came up the other day and I was just trying to flip back and forth and catch a lot of his at-bats. The Nationals aren't good. And they don't have a ton of players that I need to specifically see. Not that I don't like watching Juan Soto, but I'm not learning anything necessarily. So I was trying to bounce between a bunch of games. But I bring that up also because I don't know if you've noticed this year, but with teams so limited in how many players they can call up in September, a lot of the bad teams don't have enough of those guys. And maybe it's also compounded by the fact that AAA, the AAA season is going, it's almost contemporaneous with the end of the major league season now. So we just may not see a lot of those guys. You know, maybe Bobby Witt Jr. doesn't come up, not because the Royals don't want him up, but because Omaha's still playing until the end of the month. And so they just want him to finish the season with the team, which I do understand. I think there is some value in that.
Yeah, I think so. Obviously you have very specific professional reasons to want to see these guys. For me, it's like, you know, are you a top 10 blue chipper? I want to see that guy. But you've seen that guy like 5 years ago. So
hopefully.
By the way, I've used this like not that he's some like, you know, uncovered diamond or anything like that, but I got to see Wander Franco when he was 17 years old playing in Princeton.
Oh yeah, so in the same year.
Yeah, and I was doing some freelance piece for like a West Virginia travel magazine, and they wanted me to go to minor league games in West Virginia, so I go see a Princeton game, and for 5 minutes I felt like Keith Law, because I was like, oh, I'm gonna watch this, you know, 17 year old guy that no one's seen yet but everybody's heard about. And I my takeaway was he's good. This is how you, if you're not a scout and you have no scouting background, I think I was able to identify in real time that he had amazing bat speed, but, you know, and I'm sitting around because a couple of people in the ballpark knew that I was, you know, a writer from out of town. And so Wander Franco comes up, I take notice, the guy goes, so what is he doing that no one else is doing? And I just completely faked it for, you know, 5 minutes and said, he's younger than all these guys. I knew that was true. And then the bat speed is amazing. And he's good. I got to go get a beer. I'll see you.
Well, now you've learned how to be me. Actually.
And that was a big lie because they don't sell beer at the Princeton Race Stadium. So.
Oh, that's there you go. Jeez. Well, now it's not even a lit race, a college underclass.
Yeah, and I think they changed all their names and everything too. So I don't
They had to. Oh God, that's, you know what? I don't even want to go down that particular rabbit hole, especially because now, you know, the Somerset. So the Yankees moved their AA affiliate from Trenton, which is now independent, to Somerset. The Somerset Stadium is great. The people up there have been great, but it's an hour further from my house. Mm-hmm. And so, because this is all about me, I'm extremely upset about this. Like, yes. I used to be able to drop in on Trenton at almost a moment's notice. And now Somerset is, it's definitely more of a production. I ended up going there Saturday.
Yeah, I saw your pictures from there.
Yeah, it was great. That's a really cute stadium, and it's actually pretty easy to get to. Like, I don't know why. You know, it's first year, it's pandemic, but they haven't drawn that well a few times I've been there, which is kind of surprising because it's a Yankees affiliate right outside of New York City, a really nice stadium. I would definitely recommend, not that I would ever tell people don't go to such and such a ballpark, but hey, that's a really nice one. And they've had some real prospects there. Luis Medina's pitching there. Randy Vasquez pitched Saturday. He was the main reason I was there, as Waldo Peraz is in the lineup. He's definitely one of their better prospects. Like, it's pretty good experience there, and the couple times I've been there, there just hasn't been anybody in the ballpark. I'm just hoping that a lot of these are still like artifacts of pandemic, people not going to games as much, and we're still getting back into that rhythm.
I haven't seen the numbers or anything. We have the Columbus Clippers, the AAA team affiliate of the Indians here, and they always draw very, very well, and it's a, you know, it's almost a major league quality stadium kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And Allison and I went to a game a month ago or something, and it wasn't particularly crowded on a kind of night where normally it would be. Yeah. Maybe they're drawing well, maybe they're not, I have no idea, but it just definitely had the vibe of the hardcore people were there, but maybe a year out of practice got people out of practice.
I really hope that this is a temporary thing rather than, you know, obviously baseball screwing with the minor league, screwing with the schedule this year, because I think that may have affected things. I'm just hoping that a lot of this is ultimately temporary rather than some permanent new feature, because I love minor league baseball. And I don't love what Major League Baseball did to it, but it would be a shame to see them kind of lose what they've built up.
Well, I think that sentiment expands to about everything in society right now. Let's just hope this is all just a temporary feature.
Yes, it's very true.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
So I want to divert from baseball just for a moment because you and I have something in common, which is that we have both become fans of a very non-American sport and particularly sport league. You have adopted an English Premier League team.
I haven't really adopted a team yet.
Oh no? Okay, you've just started watching.
I started watching with this season for like, because I'm the most cliche middle-aged white guy ever. I said, well, I think I'm going to get into English soccer, and that's what everybody does, right? And at first I thought, I'm going to find a team. I'm going to do what, again, is a cliche American white guy thing, is I'm going to find my quest for a team to root for.
Right.
And so it's been 4 weeks plus the international break of the season. And over the last couple of weeks, I decided I'm not going to just pick a team. I'm going to see what happens. I'm just going to watch. And I've been watching like this. I watched four matches this weekend, and there's one today at 3 o'clock that I'll probably watch. Mm-hmm. I've been watching, you know, between four and seven matches every week. And I'm just sort of watching for the players. And I'm watching, I don't want to say storylines because I don't like that concept in sports reporting and stuff, but just sort of letting it wash over me and enjoy a sport in a way that's very different than the way I take in baseball, which is I have to have a take on everything. Mm-hmm. And I haven't yet found, oh, I really like that team. Like at first I thought maybe I'll root for Tottenham because I know more players on Tottenham than I know for anybody else. But then I'm like, why would I root for Tottenham? Why would I pick that? There's no natural reason. So I don't have a team yet. I'm sort of ruling out a couple of teams because of either their ownership or they're just not fun. Like Arsenal is not fun to watch. And I don't like the guy who owns them, who is, I forget how to pronounce his name, Stan Kroenke or whatever his name is, who owns the Rams. So I've sort of like, okay, I'm not gonna root for Arsenal, but I haven't ruled anybody else out. And now I've got championship level and like League Two fans trying to get me to root for their teams. Like Peterborough is a championship team, and I met a Peterborough supporter at a bar here in Columbus like during the first week of the season. I'd never heard of the Peterborough team, I don't know, but he spent the entire morning at the bar buying me beers and trying to get me to be a Peterborough fan.
Please like my team.
It is very much so. And I'm like, well, I like this guy. He's actually kind of cool. We hung out. It was really cool. And so, you know, I guess I'm going to be a Peterborough fan. He's now claiming he's going to get me a jersey or a kit or whatever you want to call it.
A kit. Yes. A kit. Right. I think that's right.
He said he's going to order me one. I said, that's too much. He goes, well, if you don't tell me what size you are, I'm just going to get you a small. So you better just tell me what size you are. I'm like, oh, okay, fine. So I'll be sporting a Peterborough kit here pretty soon.
Yes, my equivalent to that is I have become a fan of Welsh rugby, specifically rugby in general, Welsh rugby, because my in-laws are both Welsh-born. My father-in-law is a huge rugby fan, and my wife is also a huge rugby fan. And so there are certain things in the year, like Six Nations tournament that is every spring, like we watch every match, and Wales actually was pretty good this year after being terrible briefly the year before for the pandemic. But my father-in-law very thoughtfully got me several books to read on rugby, particularly the history of rugby. And now I can talk about the time that Llanelli beat the All Blacks. What a historic moment. I wasn't born yet when that happened, but we all know how important that is. So it has been, and like soccer, I think if you said to me, hey, you got to get into soccer, well, I kind of know how soccer works. Roughly. Yeah. I don't know it, but I understand it. But rugby to me, I was like.
Seemed impenetrable.
Yeah, what I don't understand. Wait, when is the second down? What is happening here? Yes. Why doesn't he have any teeth left?
It's close enough to certain aspects of American football. You were like, okay, I get what they're doing. No, that doesn't make sense. Now what's going on? And soccer, I never played it. You know, my biggest exposure to it was my kid playing it when he was like six and then giving it up. You know, I get it. You watch I watch the World Cup every 4 years because I'm a mark and it's on TV and it's interesting. So, you know,
that is definitely middle-aged white guy. I'm a huge soccer fan. What are you talking about?
Every 4 years, baby. Yes. Yeah, it's the same way that people become curling experts every 4 years.
Oh my God, yes.
But And that actually is part of the reason I got into soccer. I was watching the Euro final over the summer.
Oh, yeah.
It was the
Italy
England final, and it was on. And
Forza Azzurri.
Sorry, I was rooting for England because I've been doing genealogy, and I realize I am way more English than I ever knew. But
but your last name ends in a vowel, as Phil Rizzuto would say. You must be Italian.
Adopted. My dad's adopted name. His stepfather adopted him. I would be a McIntyre. I'm actually Scottish. If it wasn't for that, but which makes sense. Because I'm pasty and I'm bald and I don't like it to be above 60 degrees and things like that. So genetically, I come
prefer
by,
if it were raining.
Exactly. I come by that, honestly. But I watched that match and it was interesting. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do it. And I was worried about the learning curve. Mm-hmm. And for the game itself, the learning curve is not terribly hard. I mean, the details and the in-depth stuff, obviously, will take a long time to really, truly appreciate. But just the same way someone can go to a baseball game and understand the pitcher's trying to do this, the batter's trying to do this, the fielders are moving this way for that reason. That basic level, I've gotten pretty good in soccer. Now, the real detailed stuff about, and I'm trying to think of now a baseball equivalent of, you know, setting up a batter with this pitch to go to that pitch. Oh, that's a little like next level understanding on that. Knowing where I'm not talking about big shifts, but just knowing when a left fielder is shading somebody to right, you know, one way or the other. I'm not there yet. I'm certainly not there yet, but you know, I know what offsides is. I know what, you know, the difference between trying to make space, not make space, all those sorts of things. And it's been really rewarding just learning new. Now, lore and knowing that this guy 7 years ago did this for this team he was on loan to, that's going to take forever, but I'm getting there.
Yep. All right. So let's talk about your book, Rethinking Fandom, which is coming out. You can pre-order it now if you go to craigcalcaterra.com/book. It is right there. It is also on beltpublishing.com's website where you can pre-order it. Rethinking Fandom, How to Beat the Sports Industrial Complex at Its Own Game. Tell me about it.
So the idea is not what a lot of people, when I've described the book, have said. I'm not telling you not to be a sports fan, and I'm not telling you all the things that suck about being a sports fan. And there are a lot of bad things about fandom. It can become toxic. It can become obsessive. This is not about that. I touch on those issues. But the idea is, as sports fans, we are sort of captive audiences, and we are suffering from a huge amount of Stockholm syndrome in terms of identifying ourselves with a team and identifying ourselves with the laundry and the ownership of the team. And because of that loyalty, that very understandable loyalty and that very understandable emotional affiliation we have with teams, they are able to take advantage of us in a number of ways. And it's everything from the publicly funded stadium stuff to the tanking phenomenon to the very questionable social justice positions that a lot of ownership and leagues take vis-a-vis players and vis-a-vis the world at large. We gravitate towards the team, and we identify with that, and we almost give it cover. Well, you don't have to be that way. You don't have to. You know, there are a couple of things you have to do. First, you have to identify that. You have to realize this is how teams take advantage of it. They're not into sports for the same reason you are. The guy who owns the Dodgers might very well have enjoyed lifting up that championship trophy. Mark Walter, I'm sure, enjoyed that. That's not why he bought the Dodgers. Maybe part of that is why he bought the Dodgers, but they're businesses, and they don't want the same thing you want. If that happens to coincide, that's great, but they don't necessarily want the same thing you want. Talking about the Orioles earlier, if you're one of the Angelos boys, I'm sure you're doing pretty well financially right now. They could go for it somehow over the next couple of years, and it would probably be worse for them financially. And the question is, are they going to do it? This is a problem in sports fandom that people don't identify. And I want to look at different ways to be a sports fan that doesn't require you to buy into those notions and to give cover for ownerships and leagues. Things like rooting for players. And I mean, a lot of this is the soccer thing. I started thinking, should I root for Arsenal or should I root for Man City or who should I root for? I'm like, well, no, I want to watch Lukaku play. I want to see Ronaldo play. I'm interested in those guys. That's why I'm watching the sport. I don't care necessarily what the owner does or the prospects of the team. It's good if they do well, but rooting for players is this more fun for me. Getting involved in sports and getting involved in the social justice stuff, the Colin Kaepernick situation in the last couple of years, I'm not an NFL fan anymore. I gave it up years ago, but I was very interested in seeing Colin Kaepernick and what happened with him afterwards. Just being that sort of a sports fan is okay. You could be a Fairweather fan too. This is another whole chapter in the book about it's okay to be a Fairweather fan. If you root for the Minnesota Timberwolves and you're like 35 years old, it's been almost your entire life since that team has been good. I mean, Kevin Garnett was good when you were like in grade school, it's been like 30 years.
Now he's acting.
Yeah, exactly. It's been like 30 years since they've been good. At what point are you still required to give all your devotion and your money and your attention to the Minnesota Timberwolves? Well, you're not. Maybe you can become a Pacers fan or a Bulls fan or a Bucks fan. Why not? And that's something that when you talk with sports fans, they consider to be anathema. But I don't think it is. And so my book is basically arguing to be a different sort of sports fan if you want to. And there's nothing wrong with that. And that doesn't mean you have to give up sports.
My guest today has been the great Craig Calcaterra, whose book is coming out in April. We've just been talking about that, Rethinking Fandom. Also, you should subscribe to his newsletter, cupofcoffee.substack.com. You will get lots of recaps, lots of interesting commentary on the Western film acting career of Dane Dunning, as well as a dose of Columbus politics, some great takes on legal issues in baseball, and lots, lots more. I am a very happy subscriber and look forward to reading your book. Craig, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Keith.
That's all for this week's show. Thank you so much for listening. Just my regular reminder, I do have two books of my own out, The Inside Game, which came out this year in paperback, and Smart Baseball, which came out a few years ago. We are approaching the holidays. Everyone's looking for gift ideas. I think my books are the ideal gifts, but I may be biased on that subject. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. Stay safe. Wear your mask. Please get vaccinated if you haven't already. I talked in my most recent newsletter about our own experiences with a breakthrough infection here in the house. And I've always been pro-vaccine, pro-mask, but I feel even more strongly about it now. Thanks again. Take care.